Thank you for joining us for Prima's podcast series. I am Taekwon Gilbert, the education coordinator for Prima. On today's podcast, we will speak with Thomas Logan, risk manager for the Port of Philadelphia, and Anthony DiBernardino, partner for USI Insurance Services. They will be speaking about validating your statement of values. Please enjoy the podcast. Tom, Anthony, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Taekwon.
Yeah, glad to be here, Taekwon.
Very welcome. So, why are insurance companies continually trying to increase property values?
I'll start with that one, Taekwon. This is Anthony. So, property values are essentially the starting point of the entire process. The values dictate the limits that they're going to provide. It helps quantify the risk so that they can, you know, understand how much risk they're taking on. And the other thing that we know is that the values are always changing. So every year they're looking to update those values. There's inflation every year and the cost to rebuild the same building, it goes up every year. I saw some statistics from one national appraising company and they said that there's nearly 90% of the buildings that they appraised in 2020 and 2021 were undervalued. And so that means that, you know, we're constantly playing catch up. 68% of those buildings were undervalued by at least 25%. So it's a process of always catching up. And it's only gotten worse lately because of accelerated inflation and supply chain issues that we all know about and have led to greatly increased cost of construction. You should also be clear, you know, the insurance companies want to make sure that they're charging appropriately. And they're charging appropriately to make sure that they're funded to pay for losses when they inevitably incur. From the insured's perspective, from the buyer's perspective, you know, you want to have the right values as well, because you want to make sure that you've got enough limit and you understand what your risk is. So carriers want to make sure that they get that right, and they're constantly pushing that up. If you don't do that, you can run into problems with coinsurance, with margin clauses, with scheduled limits, actual cash value limitations. You know, the carriers might refuse to offer a quote. So it's really best to sort of embrace that process and make sure that they are the right values coming in.
There's some great points, Anthony. And as a risk manager, I, like many of you, really, you know, it's a balance between what's the right amount of coverage and the insurance expense line in that budget, right? So the pressure to increase those statement of values is can be great sometimes when you look at, you know, what your carriers are saying, hey, you need to move these up to get in line. But you've always got to balance that out, you know, the relationship between the statement of values and that cost that you're spending, those insurance dollars that are so important and are, you know, you, sometimes some of the biggest or the second biggest behind maybe payroll, et cetera. So having really that standardized, reportable, repeatable process, really fully utilizing the extensive resources that your carrier offers, such as described by Anthony, is really, to me, the key to balancing, developing the right statement of values while always keeping that bottom line in mind as well. But, you know, having that the right statement of values so you can avoid some of those issues that you might be worried about that Anthony had mentioned.
How can you validate what the actual value of a building is?
Well, I'll start with this. To me, that's kind of the million-dollar question, if you will, or maybe pun intended, because where you start is really so important on how you're going to end up. I always rely on, you know, where I ended the year, and it's not a one-and-done process. If you, you know, every renewal, you do your statement of values and you kind of just tuck them away and leave them there. You're kind of hoping when you pull them out again at the next renewal, you've got good numbers to work with. So to me, the easy answer would be take your statement of values where you ended, hit them with the inflationary number and move on. But that's not really going to give you the right numbers because, you know, inflation doesn't necessarily, you know, general inflation doesn't necessarily keep up with building costs and inflation, if you look at the costs of replacement in a lot of our markets. So really utilizing the resources, again, that your broker has can really put you in a great position to know confidently that you've got the right numbers. So when you're laying them out there and lay people you know, maybe your CEO, your CFO is asking, well, geez, where did you come up with these numbers? You really have a process that you followed, and you can point back to actual logic and evidence to say, hey, we developed them based on what our carrier provided and some of the tools that Anthony will talk about in a minute to get to the right numbers so we can say with confidence, this is what our statement of values should look like. Anthony, can you add some more insight there?
Sure. It's always a problem to figure what that is, and every year you have to go through the same process. And the reason you do it, too, is you know, your internal stakeholders are often confused by the process. They look at market value. You know, they look at what would it cost me to buy that building, or how much did I buy it for? But that's very different than what replacement cost is, because you're looking to ensure the replacement cost. Replacement cost is what would it cost to rebuild that building if it were to become the theoretical hole in the ground. So you know, there's some tools. There's definitely some third-party tools out there. There's CoreLogic and Marshall and Swift, which are estimating tools and are pretty good. But then there's also third-party appraisers. And a lot of clients, a lot of insureds choose third-party appraisers. It's not terribly expensive. It's not free, but it's not terribly expensive to get those values right. And I think often, especially in the public sector, where you've got so many older buildings, historical buildings that have different construction techniques that aren't used anymore, or different materials that aren't used as frequently or cost efficiently anymore, to get those values right to avoid any problems when you have a claim.
Why are there so many questions about the details of every building?
Yeah, I think it's important to, you know, understand where that's coming from with the insurance companies, and to understand that only helps the insured. You know, you hear about COPE, which is construction, occupancy, protection, and exposure. But what was just a simple schedule of values in the past isn't good enough anymore. And that's really good for the insured. It's good for the insured to be able to identify all of the details about each and every building that's insured in the schedule. And you're starting to hear about secondary characteristics a lot now, too. That's the new terminology, secondary characteristic. And that's a growing critical part of the data collection process. Again, it benefits the insured because the more data you have on every building, and it is a tedious process, that's not lost on anybody. It's definitely a very tedious process to get it all. But the more detailed information that you have on the building only helps in the modeling process. And we'll talk about the modeling process a little bit later, because the insurers are using that predictive modeling to determine what could possibly happen. So what I'm getting at is things like, if you've got a 100-year-old building, that's not enough information, because then they're going to assume that the roof is 100 years old, that the electric is outdated. You've got to be able to tell them when the roof was updated and what kind of tie-downs were used. When was the electric updated? Not only that it's sprinklered, but to the NFPA standards. So if you can provide all of that data, it helps you, because they're going to look at it from a risk acceptance standpoint. What are they willing to take on? You know, if you just tell them it's a 100-year-old building, they might say, no, thank you. I'm not interested in insuring that. But if you can show them and list out for them all of the work that you've done to update that building and make it a good risk, then they're likely to accept it. And then not only that, then their loss modeling is going to look better, and that's only going to help the insured.
Yeah, and I can tell you from my standpoint, I really value, we have a risk engineering firm that comes in every year and as part of our renewal process looks at, you know, 4 to 6 of our properties. And we, as Anthony indicated, like a 100-year-old building, we run the gamut from brand new construction to those 100-plus-year-old buildings. And I found that seeing the buildings and doing the actual walkthroughs when our risk engineers visit and being shoulder to shoulder and seeing what they see through their eyes and the comments. So not just reading a report at the end of, you know, end of their visits, but actually going through the buildings with them and getting their feedback live and seeing what they see is, it's just adds so much value and helps with the entire process. I can give you an example. This year we had our folks, the risk engineering folks, look at some of the buildings. One of them was brand spanking new. Figured, okay, this the home run, will be in and out there in 5 minutes. And the things they bring to light, our tenant, we're a landlord, so our tenant actually had installed some racking in the facility. Because they did that, they actually had compromised some of the sprinklers in the building. And to the point where, okay, that's not going to work. If there's a fire, you've got a real issue. So we had to go back to our tenant and have them modify and fix at their cost what they had done that could have prevented a big problem down the road if it wasn't for the engineers pointing that out and indicating that. So having that is just so invaluable to really help determine and understand, you know, why and what they're looking for and what we can do to really improve our risk and ultimately our rating and pricing when it gets to the underwriting standpoint.
Why do you need to provide business interruption and extra expense values?
Well, this is one of those pieces that, you know, nobody expects a loss, right? Knock on wood, hopefully you never have an experience loss. But the whole point is, if you do, you really don't want to be sitting in front of your CEO, CFO, explaining, well, we just don't have the right coverage to put us back into business, and you know, or it's going to take a lot longer than we'd hoped. You want to be in there explaining to them, hey, we got the claim going, we've got the, you know, the coverage to really not skip a beat. You know, we're going to continue in business. We're, you know, there's no loss of, or we're not out of business for any point in time. We're right back and running and hitting the ground running after that loss. And having this coverage in the right levels can really, you know, again, make you sleep easier at night. And again, relying on your carrier to help you develop those coverages as part of your entire statement of values is just key, in my opinion. Anthony?
Yeah, there's also a lot of pushback there because I think those values are the hardest to determine. You know, the building values can be a little bit easier, but when you talk about, well, what is my business interruption risk and what is my extra expense risk, it's a lot harder to quantify because you've got to sit down with your accountants to figure it out. You got to sit down with the CFO. You have to look at the business and figure it out, especially in the public sector space. It can be really difficult. And I'll just give you one example, which was a parking authority that we worked with, and they had a very difficult time trying to determine what their limits were, and we're really just kind of filling out a basic worksheet and sort of guesstimating. But what we needed to do with them was look at the income flow of the garages, which was very seasonal. So we had to look at when it was coming and what those income flows looked like, what kind of alternatives were available, where would they be able to redirect business if a garage went down, and what would the period of time be to make it rebuild, you know, and in that case, we had a client at a $15 million limit, and we determined that they really needed $30 million, and then they ended up needing it a few months later when they lost a garage. So it's critical to have that avenue of recovery, because where else are you going to get that money? You're not going to go back to your taxpayers or your public authority to try and get that money, and oftentimes they are looking for that money from you at the end of the year, so you need to be able to replace that if tragedy happens.
How does this impact coverage and pricing?
Well, that's where it all ties together, really, is the coverage and the pricing, right? So you need to establish what are the correct values, and you need to go through the process to figure out, you know, what are the accurate characteristics of the building? Because that's what the insurance company is going to do. And if you don't engage them in that process and you don't help them through that process, then they are going to make assumptions. And the assumptions aren't going to work out for you. because they're going to be very, very conservative on it. So explaining that when the insurance company goes through their premium price and, you know, let's say they've accepted the risk, they've decided that, you know, this is something I will insure. They start by, well, how much risk is there? And that's, you know, that's the values. And then they do their modeling where they try and figure out what is the maximum probable loss. You know, so you give them a schedule of $100 million and they say, they put it through their modeling. They put it through their wind modeling. They put it through their catastrophic modeling, their flood modeling, that's determining what the flood zones are, to figure out what is the maximum probable loss. So how much money could I possibly lose on this? Just because there's $100 million in values doesn't mean I'm going to lose $100 million if there's an event, because there might be enough separation, there might be enough spread of risk that I need to understand what the maximum probable loss is, because I want to know what I could end up paying. So let's say that you don't give them data and they have to make assumptions. So they go through their modeling and they come up with $25 million in maximum probable loss, but they're not willing to take on $25 million. They're only willing to take on $10 million. So what do? They either decline the risk, or they say, we'll only give you $10 million, go buy excess above that. That's a very expensive proposition for you. Or they'll say, we'll buy reinsurance. So then they have to go out and spend money buying reinsurance for $15 million excess of the $10 million to get to the $25 million maximum probable loss, which is going to be very expensive, and then they pass that money on to you. They pass that expense on to you, and then they've got to buy excess of that to get up to the $100 million limit that you need. So if you help them with that modeling, and, you know, whether your broker helps you with that, or you have a third party that helps you with that, by giving them all of that data, they can do that modeling. If you can do the modeling as well and show to them, you know, why the risk is controlled and limited, it's going to impact your coverage and your pricing. The other thing that they could possibly do is put in something like coinsurance if they don't like the risk, where they think that the probable loss is too high. Or they might put in what they call a margin clause, where they say, if you are underinsured, there's going to be a penalty on the claim. There's a lot of ways that they're going to respond poorly if you don't provide all of the data and help them with that modeling that they do to get you the best possible price.
Yeah, and I would say this conversation is very pertinent. We literally, mid-November, just finished our property renewal process, and I would say a very successful property renewal process, which in this market has not been easy. And one of the things that we utilize in conjunction with Anthony and our broker is a timeline for renewal. And this was really key, starting with our renewal strategy meeting. The whole team came in, we spoke, talked about, you know, where we were, what the market looks like, which was really good because we were able to set expectations. I brought my CEO in, the CFO in, to hear what potentially we were looking at from a rate change, what they were seeing out in the market, the things that were driving that. And that really helped in that as we had continual conversations and eventually the final pricing really gave them an opportunity to say, well, geez, this is what I was thinking. You guys came in here. And as I said, it was a successful renewal. We were able to really outperform the market with our broker's hope or help here. So all the things that they did as far as setting out, and one of the key pieces after their renewal strategy meeting was really developing those statement of values. And that's where I think was key in helping us develop a really successful renewal. Using our team and the work that they have and some of the key processes that Anthony's team was able to provide, including, you know, CoreLogic to get the right statement of values, that just resulted in a really good submission, went to market, came back with a lot of, even though we weren't necessarily anticipating, we had a lot more market capacity that we anticipated, which then led us to pick and choose what carriers we were going to utilize. Some stayed the same, some didn't, unfortunately, because they didn't come back competitive enough. So in this market, I think it was almost unheard of, but a lot of it was due to the pre-planning, the work on developing the proper and the correct statement of values and utilizing the tools that our broker had at their disposal, really, in my opinion, led to really a best-in-class property program, one that would, you know, enable me to sleep at night knowing we had the right coverages, but also let my CEO know, hey, we did it with the right dollars and actually came in under budget. So it was a great process and it led to a great, great result for us.
We have reached the end of our podcast. Thank you for joining us. Please be sure to visit the Prima website to enjoy a variety of education resources and check us out on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and our very own Prima Talk. Have a great day.